ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today we are reading from Canto 5, Chapter 14. Chapter 14 is entitled The Forest of Enjoyment. Today we are on text 8. There is not much, I couldn't identify the vocative of this verse, so we'll just read the word to word and then you all can repeat. Atha kadachi nivasa paniya dravina adi aneka atma upajivana abhinivesha एताश्यं संसार कर्तव्यं इततः परिधावति अथ कदाचित् निवास पानीय द्रविण आदि अनेक आत्म उपजीवन अभिनिवेशः संसार अतव्यां इततः परिधावति अथ कदाचित् निवास पानीय द्रविण आदि अनेक आत्म उपजीवन अभिनिवेशः एताश्यां संसार कर्तव्यां इततः परिधावति। Someone wants to try? Okay. English translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Atha, in this way. Kadachit, sometimes. Nivasa, residence. Paniya, water. Dravina, wealth. Adi, and so on. Aneka, in various items. Atma upajivana, which are considered necessary to maintain body and soul together. Abhinivesha, a person fully absorbed. Etasyam, in this. Samsara, atavyam, the material world, which is like a great forest. Ita tataha, here and there. Paridhavati, runs around. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Sometimes the conditioned soul is absorbed in finding residential quarters or apartments and getting a supply of water and riches to maintain his body. Absorbed in acquiring a variety of necessities, he forgets everything and perpetually runs around the forest of material existence. Purport. As originally mentioned, a poor man belonging to the mercantile community goes to the forest to get some cheap goods to bring back to the city to sell at a profit. He is so absorbed in the thought of maintaining body and soul together that he forgets his original relationship with Krishna and seeks only the bodily comforts. Thus, material activities are the conditioned soul's only engagement. Not knowing the aim of life, the materialist perpetually wanders in material existence, struggling to get the necessities of life. Not understanding the aim of life, even though he acquires sufficient necessities, he manufactures artificial necessities and thus becomes more and more entangled. He creates a mental situation whereby he needs greater and greater comforts. The materialist does not know the secret of nature's ways. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 3.27, Prakriti Kriya Manani Gune Karmani Sarvashah Ahankara Vimudhatma Kartaham Iti Manyate. The bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities, which are in actuality carried out by nature. Due to lusty desire, the living entity creates a certain mental situation, whereby he wants to enjoy this material world. He thus becomes entangled, enters different bodies, and suffers in them. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamhayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripasindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. In the previous verse, the conversation between Jad Bharat and Maharaj Rahuguna had come to an end almost. And a question was asked, because obviously Jad Bharat had described the whole material existence and conditioned life in terms of an allegory. And therefore a question was asked that, can you please explain it a little bit in a simpler way? I could not understand this allegory, I'm not so intelligent, so can you please explain it in a simple way? And this chapter is the result of that question. We are seeing verses over here which describe the chapter itself is entitled The Forest of Enjoyment. And the verses are describing the forest is obviously this material world, and obviously there's no enjoyment in this material world. So very heavy verses are coming up about this material world, how a conditioned soul tries to enjoy in this material world despite facing so many difficulties. So as part of that description, today's verse is describing one more aspect of this material existence. How the conditioned soul is getting entangled in his pursuit of sense gratification and his never-ending pursuit of trying to make his life more and more comfortable. So that is what, you know, Sukadeva Goswami is stressing in this particular verse. He says that he is absorbed in finding residential quarters or apartments and getting a supply of water and riches. So just to maintain his body, a conditioned soul has to work so hard. In fact, while preparing for this verse, the Maslow's theory of hierarchical needs came to my mind. So I'm sure many of you must have heard about the Maslow's theory of hierarchical needs. He actually elaborated on what are the needs of a human being. Now, Maslow was not a devotee, but he was just highlighting what hierarchy of needs does a human being go through in his life cycle. That is what he describes, and it's very aptly fitting in with today's verse's description and the purport which Srila Prabhupada has written. So according to Maslow, at the bottom of his triangle of hierarchical needs, he talks about the basic needs of a human being. And the basic needs of a human being are his physiological needs and his safety needs. And physiological needs is what is being discussed in today's verse. Where in physiological needs, he is saying that it's food, water, warmth and rest. That is what Maslow is saying, and we see over here. Even in the translation, it says that he's getting a supply of water and riches to maintain his body, getting an apartment, some riches and some water to maintain his body. So that is comes at the bottom most in the Maslow's theory of hierarchical needs, where a soul is first trying to make himself comfortable. Having come in this material world, he's just trying to find ways to survive. Now we see all over the world how much struggle is there just for survival. We might not see it so evident in, you know, Australia, because we are living in this developed country where you know, things are much more organized. There is a big, you know, things are a little more structured. However, if you go, you know, India, from where most of us come, there is so much struggle just for people to stay above the poverty line. Most of the population, the struggle is how to survive and how to get the next meal on the in the house, and how to get the next food on the plate. Most of the population is struggling with that. In fact, few days ago, Kesho Prabhu was giving class, and you know, there was a question asked to him that we see so much of corruption and all that going on. The current pandemic has brought out good also, like there are many good things which are going on. People from all over the world are getting together. There are appeals going on for generating funds to send to India. But on the other hand, we also see so much corruption. There are so many videos coming up where people are taking advantage of this whole situation. I was speaking to one Mataji who's one of their relatives was you know, struggling for life because of COVID, because of being infected with COVID. And she was saying that I think there's an injection called Ramdevisir which some people take. And you know, that injection used to cost 1500 rupees, but now in the black market, you know, there is a black market, imagine, and it's being sold for 40,000 rupees. So that means even basic survival has become the prerogative of only people who can afford these things. And if you can't afford buying that injection, let's say for 40,000 rupees, then you have to give up your life. You won't be able to survive, you have to die. So there is so much struggle, and you know, Kesho Prabhu was, you know, very nicely describing. And in fact, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has also said that if, you know, too much poverty is not good. Because when too much poverty, not good in terms of spiritual advancement, obviously one gets a body and birth based on their previous karma, but too much poverty does not allow one to actually take shelter or to come to the shelter of, or even seek higher truth. It's very hard for such a person to seek, because like we were discussing in Maslow's theory of hierarchical needs, he's just trying to fulfill his basic necessities. Get food, water, some warmth and some rest. That's all he's trying to fulfill all his life. So poverty, too much poverty can bring out bad qualities sometimes in people. Too much poverty and too much greed, both go hand in hand, and they can bring out bad qualities. And therefore we see, you know, in this pandemic, there are so many people who are taking advantage. There is this black market going on, even to do the final rites after someone's relative has died. There is so much of a problem. There's no place in the crematoriums. If you pay money, then, you know, somebody will help you and, you know, do a little bit of a decent job of burning, of, you know, cremating your near and dear one's body. So poverty, you know, brings out all these bad qualities, because those people are also poor who are working in all these places. This is, you know, they are thinking this is an opportunity for us to make money, because otherwise who will, you know, pay us? We hardly live below the poverty line. So they are trying to extract and make money out of this opportunity which has come to them in the form of the pandemic. So we see poverty really brings out bad qualities in people, and people below the poverty line are just trying to survive. That's it. And, you know, then he says that once, you know, somebody is talking about people who are slightly above the poverty line, you know, the middle class people, like it is said over here, they are absorbed in finding residential quarters or apartments. So they are just, you know, trying to make some money so that one day they can, you know, come out of the rented apartment that they might be in, and maybe even at least buy a one bedroom apartment, for example. So that is the struggle which people are undergoing when they are, you know, for them the next meal in the house might not be so much of a struggle, but their struggle is how do I, you know, find one bedroom apartment or two bedroom apartment to buy and live. That might be their struggle. And then we come, and you know, this middle class, again, that is also a big strata in the society. Their whole life just goes. They are running, running, working, working, and maybe at the end they might be able to gather a little bit of money and buy that apartment, and ultimately because of that struggle they have become so stressed that they might die, and you know that apartment will not even be enjoyed by them. Ultimately they couldn't enjoy the fruits of their hard labor. Their children might enjoy probably, and the children might not even want to stay in that apartment. That might become the irony. So that is the middle class society. And then if we take the example of the educated class, people who are slightly, you know, above the middle class, they might not be so much in a struggle of always living in a rented house. They might have been able to afford a house. But the struggle just to, you know, commute to work, come back from work, you know, whichever offices they go to, that itself is so big. Now again, you know, taking the example of India, even if that level of society has been able to afford a car, let's say a simple car, will they be able to get to their office in time? Because the infrastructure has not been designed to make it conducive for them. The infrastructure has been made to design to frustrate everyone. You know, actually it gives us a reminder, material world is frustrating when you're stuck in the traffic jam. So even though they might have a car, they might be sitting in their car comfortably, but are they reaching their destination? How long it will take them to travel to reach their destination? Or people, you know, some people don't want to take their cars and can't afford a car. They might travel in trains. But so much, you know, like the trains are overpacked because of the population. Somebody had sent me a video some time ago about, you know, train travel. And thankfully we are in the Western country, so we don't have to go through that. But Mumbai, the place where I come from, traveling in trains is a nightmare. Like even in my younger days when I was studying or when I was working, we had to travel by trains. It was little bit decent, but now it is becoming more and more of a nightmare. Like they were showing a video, it was taken like a bird's eye view of a platform during peak hours, and how, you know, people were just being packed, trying to pack themselves inside that train, like, you know, like sheep and dogs are packed inside, you know, a cattle run like that. They were being, you know, they were trying to get inside, and then many were not able to get inside. But obviously the pressure is there that I have to reach to my office in time. If I'm late, obviously I'll be called upon, or, you know, I will lose my job. That pressure is there. So some people take the risk of just, you know, trying to stand on 1 inch of that dashboard in the train, or holding on to little bit, you know, sometimes they're holding on to the side window. They can't even hold into the middle pole, which is there in the train. And then we see so many deaths happening because people take this risk. In Mumbai especially, the death rate of, you know, in train travel is very high. But what does this indicate? This is just the struggle of existence. In fact, once Prabhupada was here in Melbourne, and he was waiting at a traffic light to cross, and there was so, you know, he was in the car and there were so many people who were crossing during the pedestrian crossing. And Prabhupada had tears in his eyes just looking at those people. And Prabhupada, because he is such a compassionate devotee, he was thinking that why are these people struggling over here in this material world when they are eternal, you are their father who can actually give them eternal life full of bliss, is waiting with open arms to receive them in the spiritual world, in their original home. Why do these people want to struggle? You know, traveling to work every day, going back, looking after the house. It's a perpetual struggle, especially for the Grahastha Ashram, it's a perpetual struggle. So some of these people, you know, these middle class people who, you know, the educated class, who are, you know, struggling like this, just going to office, surviving office politics, not getting promotion, getting frustrated. In my office currently, I'm handling a situation where one of my team members had applied for, you know, a senior role, like the next role, and she did not get it. There were others, you know, four others who got it, and one person who got it is a bit junior to her. And she was so frustrated, she lost all, you know, motivation to work, very demoralized. Why I didn't get that role, that person is junior to me, what have I not done? So, you know, we have to deal with these situations, and obviously there will be these frustrations in corporate life when you're working, even for the educated class. And then some of these educated class of people from India then try to come to Australia or, you know, go to USA or Canada just to make their life a little more easier. But what happens when they come here? You know, they might come here as students or, you know, to study, but taking big loans. Fathers might have sold off some property or, you know, taken some loan from somewhere just to fund the child's education. So they come here to Australia, they study and their initial years just go in trying to first repay that big loan which is pending at home, back home in India. So what do they do for that? They drive taxi. Most of the students you see, they drive taxi or they work in restaurants as a waiter. Very menial jobs they have to do just to, you know, make two ends meet. And living together in a you know, like a small place, 4-5 people live together so they can share the accommodation costs. So there is so much struggle just to, even after you come to Australia. So with great difficulty they settle that loan, education is over, they get, obviously parents want them to get married. So they get married and then, you know, this whole cycle starts. Okay, now we need to buy a house. Now that we are married, I have to buy a house. Where do we buy a house? You know, your devotees, we think it's okay, we'll buy house, small houses, or we'll live in rented houses, but we want to live near the temple. But talking about the normal people who are being described in this verse, they always, you know, they are looking for houses which are big, comfortable, so then go to the western suburbs or go to some far away suburbs. Obviously, they can't afford houses in these city, inner city suburbs. So that whole struggle is there, you know, and then work hard to pay the mortgage. Then the wife also has to start working, otherwise how will we repay the mortgage and ghar ka kharcha kaise chalayenge? So that cycle starts. Oh, maybe, you know, then somebody will come and give them advice. Why don't you buy a second property? Do negative gearing. And then to sustain that second property, buy a third property. So it goes on and on and on. And like Prabhupada says in the purport, sometimes that, you know, line between what is necessities and what is my comforts or greed, that line becomes very blurred. Very nicely Prabhupada is describing in the purport. So, you know, if somebody is happy with just basic necessities, they will not have to struggle so much for existence. But people aren't usually happy with basic necessities. They mistake that these comforts which, you know, they are vying for are basic necessities. They get confused because they don't have any spiritual enlightenment. They don't have anybody to guide them. They get confused and they are just running after these comforts which actually might not even be necessary, which they start thinking as basic necessities. So continuing in Maslow's theory of hierarchical needs, so these are the basic needs which people are trying to fulfill, like the physiological needs and the safety needs, where they need security that I have so many assets or properties, I have some bank balance. And once people have achieved that, you know, come to that comfortable level, then come the psychological needs. The psychological needs are like belongingness. People start looking for love, or people start looking for esteem needs, they start looking for prestige. So again, like Prabhupada says, they don't realize the difference being happy with basic things and, you know, being trying to have more comfortable life. And sometimes there's just the sheer peer pressure. Sometimes the pressure comes from India, because some, you know, in India their parents, neighbor's child is also, son or daughter is also in Australia or some country in US or somewhere. They have bought a big house and they have posted photo on Facebook outside their house with their new car. And what is happening to you? Where is your house? Why you are not, you know, buying a new car? So pressure comes from India actually, that you also buy a bigger house, you also have a good car. So, you know, this becomes like an esteem need, like, you know, to show. They might not want to show off, but their parents want to show off in India that, look, my son also has a nice house and a nice car. But the pressure is here, and the parents will just show off and be happy, but who has to then repay that nice house and the nice car? It is the son or the daughter here who then has to work hard and get into this cycle. So like Nas, you know, people are just trying for that esteem needs. They are trying to show prestige. They are looking for prestige and recognition in society. And they are looking for love. So some people get so frustrated that, you know, they get guidance of some devotees by some Agyata Sukriti. They come in contact with devotees and they get a chance to realize that this is all not, you know, this is not the goal of life, but the goal of life is something higher. So people who are looking up for love get frustrated, then they, you know, get guided by devotees to the true goal of life, which is love of Krishna. But others just continue in this perpetual cycle of looking for love in material relationships and looking for prestige by trying to show off that I have this, I have that, I possess this, I possess that, extended prestige that, you know, the family puts pressure on them on. And the last need, according to Maslow's theory, is the higher, you know, at the topmost triangle is self-actualization. Self-actualization or self-realization, where, you know, ultimately after having achieved all this, you know, people, especially, you know, very people who are, you know, big corporates or magnates or businessmen who have seen they don't have basic needs. struggle. They are not struggling for food, water, warmth, shelter. They are not struggling for safety and security. They have so much bank balance, they don't know what to do with it. They are not struggling for, you know, psychological needs. Like they have, you know, they've got the prestige they want. They might have loved ones as well. But after that, they, you know, reach that particular stage. So again, like I was saying, if, you know, someone has come in contact with a pure devotee or with a devotee of the Lord, they will actually realize what is the true meaning of self-actualization or self-realization. But the others, you know, then go on to, like, you know, some journeys. So many videos we see of corporates who get misguided by some scrupulous people, and they are, you know, trying to go on journeys of their own mental speculation. Like, oh, I'm doing this for the society, or I'm doing that for the society, or I'm following this guru, and that guru might be bogus guru, who might tell him about meditation, and, you know, then we have all these Osho, so many paths where a person can get misguided in his pursuit of self-actualization. So this is the struggle which a conditioned soul goes through. Prahlad Maharaj captures it very well when he's conversing with Hiranyakashipu. When he's, you know, Hiranyakashipu had put him on his lap and he asked him, what did you learn in class today? And Prahlad Maharaj is talking about, you know, Graham and the Kupam. He's saying that, you know, this whole material world, the Grahasthashram, is like Andhakupam, like a deep dark well where a person has fallen down, and if they are not trying to revive their Krishna consciousness, they will keep struggling in this particular deep dark well. So, you know, it is very important that, you know, such people get, and, you know, as devotees, for us it is very important that we spread the holy name. In Melbourne we have that going on so well, like we have, you know, Harinams happening, we have so much of book distribution happening, so many programs, Bhakti Vruksha, Nama Hatha Outreach, so many programs are happening where we are trying to reclaim these people who are struggling to, you know, come bring them back to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So that is what Prahlad Maharaj is also saying in his teachings to Hiranyakashipu, that some people are wasting their life in just this pursuit of material existence, whereas they should actually be turning to Krishna and taking his shelter. And today is also the disappearance day of a very pure such devotee who was also very compassionate in trying to bring people to the lotus feet of the Lord, which is Vrindavan Das Thakur. So we will spend the remaining time discussing a little bit about the life of Vrindavan Das Thakur. He was an associate, he was in the associate in the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. Very pure devotee. For me it was so purifying just to prepare for this class, like listening about him, reading about him, it was so nice. So we'll, you know, spend a little time glorifying Vrindavan Das Thakur in today's class. So he is best known for composing, for his composition of Chaitanya Bhagavat, which is the original most authorized work on the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Many books have been written on the life and teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. However, the Chaitanya Bhagavat and the Chaitanya Charitamrita are considered the most authorized and like the pinnacles of the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there were many records before Vrindavan Das Thakur wrote the Chaitanya Bhagavat. There were many records which were there, like unofficial records of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. But there was no proper book which a person, which a devotee, a Gaudiya Vaishnava could refer to. So therefore, you know, Vrindavan Das Thakur did this monumental task of going through those records and compiling this book, which was Chaitanya Bhagavat. So based on his books, many other books followed later on, and we'll go into that a little bit in detail. Now there is a famous verse in the Gaura Ganodesh Deepika by Kavi Karnapur, he has written that book, where he is saying, Veda Vyaso Ya Eva Sid, Daso Vrindavano Duna, Sakha Ya Kusuma Pira, Karya Tas Tam Sama Vishat. Veda Vyaso Ya Eva Sid. So he is saying that Veda Vyas, original person who was Veda Vyas originally, he became Vrindavan Das Thakur. And also Sakha Ya Kusuma Piraha. Also Krishna's cowherd friend, there is Krishna's cowherd friend in Golok Vrindavan whose name is Kusuma Piraha. That person has also entered the body of Vrindavan Das Thakur. So Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita that sometimes one person will have he will be a combination of two personalities. And one such devotee is Vrindavan Das Thakur. He is a combination of Vyasadeva and also the Sakha cowherd boy called Kusuma Piraha. So just as Veda Vyas described Krishna Leela, In Srimad Bhagavatam, in the same way, Vrindavan Das Thakur described Chaitanya Leela in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And that is why he is considered an incarnation of Vyasadeva. So initially his book, when he composed, he had given the name of to his book as Chaitanya Mangal. That was the initial name of his book. However, later on, Lochan Das Thakur, who is also like an associate of, you know, during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, he wrote a book on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's leelas, and he also named his book as Chaitanya Mangal. So therefore, you know, Vrindavan Das Thakur's book was then dubbed as Chaitanya Bhagavat. So he was born, a little bit about his background. So he was born in the year approximately 1450 or something like that, in Krishna Dwadashi, on Krishna Dwadashi in Vishakha month. And that day is coming up soon, in the next month, like in June, that, you know, his appearance day, Tithi is also coming up. So he was born in the Krishna Dwadashi in Vishakha month. Now some say he was born in Mamgachi, which is what Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami also says in Chaitanya Charitamrita. However, some say that he was born in Kumarahatta, a place called Kumarahatta in near Mayapur. His father's name was Vaikunthanath Vipra, and his mother's name was Narayani Devi. So Narayani Devi was the daughter of Sri Nalina Pandit. Sri Nalina Pandit was the elder brother of Srivas Thakur, or Srivas Pandit. So Srivas Thakur, there were five brothers in total, from whom the eldest brother was Sri Nalina Pandit, and the second was Srivas Thakur, and then he had three more younger brothers. So this Narayani, she was the daughter of the eldest brother of Srivas Thakur. So when she was a young girl, Narayani Devi, when she was a young girl, she used to live with Srivas Thakur. So she got a lot of association and mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to do his, you know, day and night kirtans, even his whole Mahaprakash Leela. So many things used to happen in Srivas Thakur's house and in Srivas Angan. So Narayani, the mother of Vrindavan Das Thakur, got an opportunity to be part of all these pastimes and to witness all these kirtans and pastimes which used to take place in Srivas Thakur's house. Now, you know, the glorification of a devotee is best heard from another pure devotee's mouth. Because, you know, like the English proverb, they say that it requires a great person to recognize another great person. So, for example, you know, there is a very good artist, a painter. Now, if I, a person like me who has no knowledge of painting an artist and all that, or drawing, if I go and see an art piece of art, I might say, yeah, it's good, but I might not know the nuances of that particular piece of art. But, you know, if another artist comes, he might be able to, oh, what a nice, you know, such nice shades or such nice beautiful strokes, or see the color combination. He might be able to, you know, describe and glorify the finer details of that piece of art. Similarly, like singing. You know, somebody sings well, but another singer, great singer, might be able to recognize the finer details of their singing. How they are able to do their swara so well and all these things. In the same way, you know, it is good to hear the glorification of a pure devotee from another pure devotee's mouth, because that way the glorification becomes so much more authentic and so much more relishable to hear. Because a great devotee will be able to glorify that devotee's greatness. He can recognize first and will be able to glorify that devotee's greatness so well for our own purification. So that devotee is none other than Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. He has glorified Vrindavan Das Thakur profusely in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So much glorification he has done in the Adi Leela, and you know, throughout the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but especially in the Adi Leela, he has glorified Vrindavan Das Thakur and his position and his book profusely. So in fact, our Param Guru Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that, you know, and this Chaitanya Charitamrita, so Krishna Das, who is Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami? You know, first, you know, understanding his glory. He has written the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is the work which normally, you know, which is the work which Srila Prabhupada also took the, you know, effort of translating. In fact, Srila Prabhupada could not complete Srimad Bhagavatam. We know how, you know, in the 10th canto, he left the world while he was translating the 10th canto. However, he considered it so important that he finished Chaitanya Charitamrita before he finished Bhagavatam. So that is, it's such an important literature for Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that, you know, if there is devastation happening and there's only few things that you can take with you, take the three books. Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. However, you know, you are not able to sustain and you can't carry those, all the three books, let go of Bhagavad Gita. But hold on to Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. But let's say the situation becomes so dire that you are not able to sustain or you are not able to carry both the books, then let go of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but do not let go of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That is the book which will save you in your darkest hour. So this is the glorification which our Param Guru Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says. And the author of that book, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, is profusely glorifying Vrindavandas Thakur unlimitedly in the Adi Leela. So we'll go through a few verses which Krishnadas Kaviraj uses to glorify. And another glorification which Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur does of the Chaitanya Bhagavat. He says that it's not only it's written in very simple language, first of all, the Chaitanya Bhagavat. But it touches the hearts. It brings out the devotional conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam down to the understanding of the common man. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, now we all know that Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. Now these Vedanta Sutra, Vedanta means Ant of the Vedas. So obviously it's the culmination of all the Vedas, and sutras means aphorisms or, you know, concise statements or concise sentences. So the Vedanta Sutras are, you know, about the absolute truth. They are the ultimate, you know, end of the Vedas, of the understanding of the Vedas. But they are very concise. These aphorisms, they are very concise and short sentences or small, you know, succinct sentences spoken about the absolute truth, which are very difficult for a common man to understand. And therefore, Vyasadeva took up the monumental task of writing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he, Srimad Bhagavatam is an elaboration on the Vedanta Sutras, where, you know, Krishna's pastimes are described much more in detail. He has elaborated on those condensed aphorisms, he elaborated on them. However, one problem is that the Srimad Bhagavatam is in Sanskrit language, which everybody might not know. It's very hard to understand, and obviously it's a very deep literature. Srimad Bhagavatam has all the pastimes, the deep pastimes of the Lord, especially, you know, of his Ras Leela and all that. And so many, the another problem which of Srimad Bhagavatam is that so many people, unscrupulous people and philosophers have translated it. And so many unscrupulous, and especially these professional reciters of Bhagavatam, they have really tarnished the image. It is Amala Purnan, but they have all tarnished the image of Srimad Bhagavatam because of giving, you know, contorted, distorted conclusions about the Rasa Leela. So Prabhupada says in, you know, some of his purports, he says that when we are trying to preach to people about Krishna, Lord Krishna, they already have that doubt in their mind that, oh, you're talking about Krishna, but he did Rasa Leela with, you know, somebody else's wives. Why did he do that? Why was he, you know, engaging young girls in such activities as Ras Leela? So already these contorted visions are there in their mind. And then we have to obviously do, you know, objection handling. We say we have to handle those objections, erase those things which these, you know, philosophers have put, mental speculators have put, and these professional Bhagavata reciters have put in everybody's minds, and then teach them about the sublime teachings of Krishna. So people are already, you know, having so many distorted views because of these, you know, because of the contribution of these mental speculators and all that. So therefore, you know, making them understand Srimad Bhagavatam becomes very difficult. And therefore we see that, and Prabhupada says also, these people are innocent, it's just that they are misguided. So we see Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, he glorifies the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And he says that now that Chaitanya Bhagavat has come, Srimad Bhagavatam has become very easy to understand. That is a glorification which even Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is doing of the book written by Vrindavandas Thakur. And who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Krishna himself, who came in the form of a devotee to enact all the pastimes which are actually there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he came to also propagate the glories of Krishna and came to propagate the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. So who is best to actually tell us about the depth and, you know, the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam but none other than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who has been described by Vrindavandas Thakur in Chaitanya Bhagavat. And that is why the pastimes of Srimad Bhagavatam become much more relishable when you know read through the eyes of Vrindavan Das Thakur in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. That is the glorification which Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives. So in the Adi Leela, chapter 8, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami describes the glories of Vrindavan Das Thakur. I'll just open those verses. So he goes from verses 33 to 42. And you know, even beyond, there are some more verses beyond where he's continuously glorifying Vrindavan Das Thakur. So he's saying, Ore Mooda Loka Suna Chaitanya Mangal Chaityana Mahima Yate Jani Be Shakal. O fools, just read Sri Chaitanya Mangal. So that time Vrindavan Das Thakur's Chaitanya Bhagavat was called as Chaitanya Mangal. Therefore, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is referring to it as Chaitanya Mangal in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But actually it's the Chaitanya Bhagavat is being referred to. So he's saying, O fools, just read Sri Chaitanya Mangal. By reading this book, you can understand all the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is Adi Leela chapter 8. So, you know, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is just embarking on the journey of writing, you know, starting to write Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. But before that, he is glorifying Vrindavan Das Thakur, and he is telling that all fools, if you just read this book by Vrindavan Das Thakur, you can understand all the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Srila Prabhupada is, you know, saying in the purport that acceptance of Chaitanya Bhagavat by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami as his reference point, indicates his acceptance of disciplic succession. Writers of transcendental literature never surpass their predecessors. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada is stressing this in the purport, that Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is offering his obeisances and glorifying Vrindavan Das Thakur because that book, Chaitanya Bhagavat, was written much before Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami wrote his Chaitanya Charitamrita. It was already finished. That whole book was already finished before he even started writing. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami even started writing. So Prabhupada says that it is natural for a devotee, and it is actually right for a devotee to recognize his predecessors and give credit to his predecessors, that, oh, everybody please read that particular book because that has glorification of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had stressed that this particular aspect of a devotee in his own pastimes. So when Vallabha Bhatt had gone to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his rendition of Srimad Bhagavatam, of a certain section of Srimad Bhagavatam, he was actually not aligning himself to Sridhar Swami's, you know, explanation of that particular section. He had not glorified Sridhar Swami for that section, and he had some difference of opinion in what Sridhar Swami had written. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually was very annoyed, and he rebuked Vallabha Bhatt. He is saying that Sridhar Swami is the original commentator and no one can surpass him. So he rebuked Vallabha Bhatt for not recognizing Sridhar Swami's contribution to the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it is said that in spiritual life, if one doesn't respect and honor the previous acharya, it is considered as maryada vratikrama. And we see that at the outset, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is recognizing his predecessor, who was Vrindavan Das Thakur, and also showing us by his own example how we should, as, you know, practicing devotees, we should also avoid the offense of maryada vratikrama, and we should recognize, you know, and give credit to anybody who has done something in devotional life before us in the same, you know, service that we are trying to do. So he has the highest regard for Vrindavan Das Thakur, and we'll continue. So in text 34, he's saying, Krishna Leela Bhagavate Kahe Veda Vyas Chaitanya Leela Ravyasa Vrindavan Das. So the translation is, as Vyasadev has compiled all pastimes of Lord Krishna in Srimad Bhagavatam, Thakur Vrindavan Das has depicted the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. So he's continuing his glorification over here. And then he's saying, verse 35, Vrindavan Das Kaila Chaitanya Mangal Yanhara Shravane Nase Sarvam Amangala. Thakur Vrindavan Das has composed Sri Chaitanya Mangal. Hearing this book annihilates all misfortune. Next verse. Chaitanya Netaira Yate Janya Mahima Yate Jani Krishna Bhakti Siddhantera Seema. By reading Sri Chaitanya Mangal, one can understand all the glories and truths of Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda and come to the ultimate conclusion of devotional service. In the verse it says, Siddhantera Sima, ultimate conclusion of devotional service. And then verse 37. Bhagavate yatha bhakti siddhantera sar, likhiya chena inha jani kariya udhar. In Sri Chaitanya Mangal, later known as Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur has given the conclusion and essence of devotional service by quoting the authoritative statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he is continuing his glorification like this. So he is not only narrated pastimes like a storybook. You know, Vrindavan Das Thakur has not just narrated the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda, and it's not just like a storybook, but he has given philosophical understandings from the Srimad Bhagavatam. He has continuously referred to Srimad Bhagavatam, and he has given us philosophical, what are the important verses in Srimad Bhagavatam he has given over there. In fact, if somebody wants to know which are the important verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is recommended one should read the Chaitanya Bhagavat and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because all the important verses of Srimad Bhagavatam have been quoted by Vrindavan Das Thakur and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in their two books, Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then in verse 38, he is saying, Chaitanya Mangala Suneyadi Pashandi Yavana Seha Maha Vaishnavahaya Tatakshana. If even a great atheist hears Sri Chaitanya Mangal, Chaitanya Bhagavat, he immediately becomes a pure devotee. So this is the blessing of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami or Phalashruti. You know, in many chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam also, like we are studying the 11th canto, we are about to finish the 11th canto with Keshav Prabhu now in our Bhaktivedanta course. So almost every chapter that we study, there is a Phalashruti at the end, where, you know, the blessings are being given. What will you achieve by reading this particular section? So in the same way, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is giving blessings or Phalashruti. He is saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not consider the qualification or the disqualification of a person. He is profusely distributing love of Godhead. And by capturing his pastimes, Vrindavan Das Thakur has opened that storehouse for all of us. And even an atheist, he is saying, even a great atheist hears this book by Vrindavan Das Thakur, he can become a pure devotee. So that is the blessing which Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is giving us, or the Phalashruti that he is giving us. And verse 39. Manushya rachite nare aicha grantha danya vrindavana dase mukha vakta shri chaitanya. So he is saying the subject matter of this book is so sublime that it appears that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has personally spoken through the writings of Sri Vrindavan Das Thakur. So here he is glorifying. He is saying that the Lord has inspired Vrindavan Das Thakur to actually write this book. In fact, if we see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wrote only 8 verses when he was, you know, manifest on this earth. He did not write so many books. He just composed those 8 verses which we recite every day called Shikshashtakam. But he blessed and he inspired so many and empowered so many of his followers to write so many books. So in the same way, here Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is saying that he inspired. It is not Vrindavan Das Thakur, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Vakta. He is the speaker through the mouth of Vrindavan Das Thakur. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also says, that when a pure devotee of the Lord is trying to embark on a service and has no other motive but just to please the Lord, and has no desire for prestige, like, or recognition. Let me write this book so that I'm recognized, or let me do this service so that people recognize my greatness, or, you know, that subtle desire that somebody will come and recognize the service I've done. So when a pure devotee of the Lord is embarking on spiritual journey without any such hidden motives or any such hidden desires, the Lord actually empowers such a devotee to be successful in their devotional service. And that is what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is saying. And if we see even Srila Prabhupada's lifetime, Srila Prabhupada would often sit and read his own books. Once you are sitting and reading Krishna book, and the disciple asked him, Prabhupada, you yourself wrote this book, why are you now sitting and reading it again? And Prabhupada says that, no, I have not written this book. Lord Krishna dictated, like he has written this book. I was just the scribe, but he was dictating. So these are my devotional ecstasies which, you know, Lord Krishna has manifested through me. So even Prabhupada's life, we see Krishna was empowering him to write so many literatures for the benefit of thousands of years of, you know, Kali Yuga which will go on. And in the same way, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is applying, you know, talking about Vrindavan Das Thakur. How Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Bhakta, he is the speaker, and Vrindavan Das Thakur is just the writer. And same is true, like Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in his humility will not say that, but same is true for Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami as well. He wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita at a very advanced age. He was almost 96 or something like that when he wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. His eyes used to droop. He was not even able to see properly. But the Lord empowered him. Lord Nityananda empowered him and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu empowered him to write, you know, this particular monument. In fact, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur glorifies. He says that one day, the day will come in the future where people will learn Bengali just to, so that they are able to read and understand Chaitanya Charitamrita. People will actually take up courses in the Bengali language so that they can understand this. And Srila Prabhupada very humbly writes in this particular purport to verse 39 of this chapter. He says that, and I have made this, you know, humble attempt to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita in English language so that people who don't know Bengali can also relish and understand Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that is Srila Prabhupada's contribution to this world. And then verse 40 and 41 we see, Vrindavan Dasa Pade Koti Namaskar Aiche Granthakari Tenhotari La Samsar. I offer millions of obeisances unto the lotus feet of Vrindavan Das Thakur. No one else could write such a wonderful book for the deliverance of all fallen souls. Narayani Chaitanyera Uchishtha Bhajan Tanra Garbe Janmila Sridasa Vrindavan. Narayani eternally eats the remnants of the food of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur was born of her womb. So now Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is, you know, going ahead and describing the background of Vrindavan Das Thakur. So first of all, he is saying that Chaitanya Bhagavat was written by Vrindavan Das Thakur, but the credits should be shared a little bit with his mother as well. So now he is starting to glorify the mother of Vrindavan Das Thakur. Again, you know, in the Gaur Ganodesh Deepika by Kavi Karnapur, there is a beautiful verse which says, Ambikaya Swasa Yasin Namna Shri Kilimbika Krishna Chushtha Krishna Uchishtha Prabhunjana Seyam Narayani Mata. So it says that the nurse, there was a nurse, or there is a nurse of Krishna, or the Dhatri of Krishna, whose name was in Goloka, whose name was Ambika. And that Ambika's younger sister was named Kilimbika. And I remember many years ago, we had one Kilimbika Mataji in the Brahmacharini Ashram over here. She was, I think she was from London. So Kilimbika is the younger sister of Ambika, who is the Dhatri or the nurse of Krishna. And this Kilimbika in Golok Vrindavan, she enjoys the remnants, Uchishtha, Krishna Uchishtha. She enjoys the remnants of Krishna in Krishna Leela. Imagine your eternal position is to just have remnants of Krishna. That is what is the position of this Ambika in Golok Vrindavan. And that Ambika, sorry, that same Kilimbika, who is the younger sister of Ambika, has now come as Narayani in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And as Narayani also, her, you know, this thing, her service is to eat the remnants of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prasad. So just as she used to eat Krishna's Uchishtha, now she has come as Narayani and she is eating Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Uchishtha. So in the Chaitanya Bhagavat itself, like speaking a little bit on the background of his mother, in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Vrindavan Das Thakur has himself glorified his mother's position. And he's saying that, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was exhibiting the Mahaprakash Leela in Srivas Thakur's house. And when he was exhibiting this Leela, Narayani was actually present there. She was the daughter of his elder brother, so she was also present over there. So he went, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went on the throne of Vishnu and he sat down on the throne, because every time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never accept if devotees would worship him as Vishnu or they would call him as Krishna or, you know, offer any reverence to him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never accept that. But this time during the Mahaprakash Leela, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went and sat on the throne of Vishnu and he actually called, assembled all the devotees and he allowed them to worship him as they would worship Lord Vishnu. So he was fulfilling all the desires of all the devotees and he was giving profuse blessings to all of them. And as part of that, he called Srivas Thakur. And he says, Srivas, come here. He calls Srivas Thakur. And he knew that Srivas Thakur at that point in time was a little bit nervous. He was a bit fearful. Because in Srivas Angan, they used to do nocturnal, you know, kirtan day and night. Not only just nocturnal, day and night there used to be tumultuous loud kirtan that used to happen. And some of the envious neighbors who couldn't participate in the kirtan and who were, you know, not even devotees, they were then, you know, getting so-called disturbed. And they had gone and complained. There were rumors that they have complained to the Qazi, the Muslim king. And that the Qazi was going to come with his soldiers and he was going to arrest Srivas Thakur. So Srivas Thakur was a bit fearful in his mind. And therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called him. And he said that you are fearful that this Qazi will come and arrest you. He said, I am the Paramatma in the heart of that Qazi. So unless I give that sanction, he will never be able to come and arrest you. I have to give him that sanction from inside. And let's say he ignores that sanction which I don't give him and he still comes here with his soldiers on the boat. I will personally go on that boat and I will challenge that Qazi. And I will, by looking at me, he will transform. I can assure you that. But I will challenge him and I will tell him that, O Muslim king, I challenge you to bring all your followers and all your holy men and all your scriptures and let them sit and recite these scriptures, and by their recitation of the scriptures, let us see if all these elephants and horses who are there in your entourage, they get ecstasy of, you know, love of God, and they are able to chant the Lord's names in ecstasy. And if they can't do it, I will do that and show you. I will make these horses, elephants and all these animals dance and chant in ecstasy. So this is the challenge I will give to the Qazi. That is what, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is assuring Srivas Thakur. So why do you fear, O Srivas? Do you not believe me? You don't have faith that I can actually give this, you know, devotional ecstasy to the animals, the elephants and the horses who are there? You think I cannot make anybody cry? Alright, let me show you. And then he says, he, you know, little Narayani was there at that time. She was hardly 4 years old or something like that. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu calls, O Narayani, come here. Chant the name of Krishna. So because, you know, she was a young girl, she took the instructions to her heart and she started chanting Krishna's names. And because that order she had received directly from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mouth, she started, not only she started chanting nicely, but she started exhibiting devotional ecstasies. And the Ashta Sattvika Bhav, which are, you know, exhibited by a pure devotee of the Lord, she started manifesting those Ashta Sattvika Bhav in her body while chanting the Lord's names. And Srivas Thakur and all the devotees who were assembled over there, they were shocked and amazed to see this transformation in Narayani. So Srivas Thakur said, he said, my dear Lord, how does it matter if the Qazi comes? So long as you are here, what is there for us to fear? So then, you know, Srivas Thakur's heart was a bit pacified when he saw this and he, you know, glorified Chaitanya Mahaprabhu like that. So this is how Narayani received the blessings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a young girl. And because, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so many pastimes used to happen in Srivas Thakur's house, she used to get the benefit of eating the remnants of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly. Just as she you know, does in her original roop as Kilimbika in the spiritual world. So there is one lesson for all of us over here. So because Narayani Devi was a pure devotee and she used to lead a pure life by eating only remnants which are offered to the Lord, she was able to conceive and, you know, bring into this world a pure devotee child like Vrindavan Das Thakur, such an empowered child. Like Vrindavan Das Thakur. So it's a lesson for actually all grahasthas. You know, first of all, the mother plays a very important role in the child's upbringing. And, you know, in the child's shaping of the character and values which a child will have throughout his or her life. And therefore, it is very important that the mother, especially during her pregnancy, she is actually, you know, keeping her consciousness very nicely engaged in the Lord and only eating prasadam so that the child gets the benefit of all that. So not much is known about the father of Vrindavan Das Thakur. His name was Vaikunthanath Vipra, but we don't have too much information about him. But it is said that he was related to Srivas Thakur's wife, whose name was Malini Devi. So Malini Devi, before her marriage, used to live obviously in her maternal house where in Mamgachi. And Vrinda, this Vaikunthanath Vipra, was actually a member of that family, Malini Devi's maternal family. So after marriage, Malini Devi came to live in Navadvip with Srivas Thakur. And once Narayani was born and she became big, she was married to this Vaikunthanath Vipra, and therefore she went and lived in Mamgachi, where, you know, Malini Devi's maternal house. And it is over there that Vrindavan Das Thakur was born, in Mamgachi. And he lived there for a few years. In fact, even today in Mamgachi, Vrindavan Das Thakur's deities are worshipped. His personal Gornitai deities are worshipped. So he lived there for a few years, but he lost his father at a very young age. Vaikunthanath Vipra left his body at a very young age. So Narayani Devi took Vrindavan Das Thakur and she left Mamgachi and she came to live in Srivas Thakur's house in Navadvip, where, you know, because of that, Vrindavan Das Thakur got so much association, you know, living in the house of Navadvip. And he lived in over there for some time in Srivas's house, and then he moved to a place called Denuda, which is also in, you know, Navadvip. And this Mamgachi, where he was born, is actually part of Modadrumadvip, one of the 9 islands of Navadvip. So Vrindavan Das Thakur composed the Chaitanya Bhagavat at the age of around 31 or 32. So he was quite young when he composed the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And it is described that he had only 4 disciples. And you know, his senior most disciple, or the purest disciple he had, whose name was Ramhari. So when Vrindavan Das Thakur passed away, all his assets were given to this Ramhari, to this disciple called Ramhari. So thus we see that Narayani Devi played a major role in Vrindavan Das Thakur's life. And she shaped the character and the values which he imbibed, because of which he became such an empowered devotee of the Lord. So we'll, you know, time is coming closer. We'll not go into, there are many verses where still, you know, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is glorifying Vrindavan Das Thakur's character and also his Chaitanya Bhagavat book. So Vrindavan Das Thakur, he has based Chaitanya Bhagavat mostly on the, you know, there are 2 people who actually made notes, like scribbled notes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. One was Murari Gupta, who was an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during his childhood and young days pastimes when he was Nimai Pandit. And so he wrote quite a few notes on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And later on, Swarup Damodar Goswami wrote elaborately some notes on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So Murari Gupta covered the childhood pastimes and all the Navadvip pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whereas Swarup Damodar Goswami mostly covered all the Neelachala pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Vrindavan Das Thakur has based his book on the notes of Murari Gupta. And therefore in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, we see that the childhood pastimes and the scholarly pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are more elaborately described than his later pastimes of, you know, Jagannath Puri. And Vrindavan Das Thakur, he was a great devotee of Lord Nityananda as well. It's said that he was so devoted to Lord Nityananda that he is considered as a disciple of Lord Nityananda. So while writing the book, he was so absorbed in, you know, glorifying Lord Nityananda also, that he kept glorifying Nityananda, and the Chaitanya Bhagavat became so big, it started becoming very voluminous. So then he realized that now there is no, you know, pages or no time, not nine, but not much scope left to now further describe Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So then he said, I'm stopping over here, and in future somebody else will elaborately describe Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And that task was taken up by none other than Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's Chaitanya Charitamrita is based on Swarup Damodar's notes, which were heard and recited by Raghunath Das Goswami. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had placed him under the care of Swarup Damodar. And Raghunath Das Goswami, after hearing, you know, so many things from Swarup Damodar about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, later when he came to Vrindavan, he used to sit on the banks of Radhakund and he used to give, you know, lectures, discourses on the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Krishnadas Kaviraj used to sit in those discourses, and he has based his elaboration of the Chaitanya Charitamrita on what he heard from Raghunath Das Goswami on the banks of Radhakund. So that is how, you know, one devotee left the work at a certain stage, and another devotee then carried forward the work so elaborately. So this is the glorification which Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami does of Vrindavan Das Thakur. Even in the Antya Leela, when he's ending the work, he's once again paying his obeisances to Vrindavan Das Thakur. And he's saying that only because of the blessings of Vrindavan Das Thakur, I've got this, you know, empowerment to compose this Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I hope he's saying also, I hope I'm not committing an offense, but I'm just doing the task of elaborating pastimes which Vrindavan Das Thakur could not elaborate because he finished his book by, you know, more glorification of Nityananda Prabhu. So we see this loving exchange which is there between Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and Vrindavan Das Thakur. And the main thing we learn is how to recognize and give credit to devotees who have also written or who have also done devotional service previous to your own devotional service. That is one great lesson we learn from glorification of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami of Vrindavan Das Thakur. So we'll end the class here, it's time. Huh? Are there any comments, corrections or questions? Yes, Sylvia.
Thank you for the wonderful class, Mataji. My question is that why does Prabhupada say that we should only study Chaitanya Charitamrita and not study Chaitanya Bhagavati in ISKCON?
So your question is, why does Srila Prabhupada say we should study Chaitanya Charitamrita and not Chaitanya Bhagavat?
In ISKCON.
Where has Srila Prabhupada said that? So Chaitanya Charitamrita obviously is, you know, elaborating pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after he took sannyas and after he went and settled in Neelachal, where he actually then started preaching about Krishna consciousness and he started fulfilling the mission for which he had come. So Srila Prabhupada sat and elaborately wrote the Chaitanya, he translated the Chaitanya Charitamrita for all of us to benefit. But Chaitanya Bhagavat has also been translated in ISKCON. So I don't think Srila Prabhupada will be upset or he will not be happy if we also read Chaitanya Bhagavat. But we should not supersede and just read Chaitanya Bhagavat and not read Chaitanya Charitamrita. For us, for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, the reference is Chaitanya Charitamrita because our, you know, founder Acharya has translated that particular book. But there is nothing wrong in also referring to Chaitanya Bhagavat because that book has also been translated by ISKCON devotees. It is there in circulation.
Thank you.
Yes, Hari?
Thank you for the wonderful class, Mataji. I've got one question. That is there someone specific who translated Chaitanya Bhagavat from Bengali or that language to English?
I don't remember the author's name, but yes, there are a few people who have translated. So I think it might be available in a temple shop also. I had seen it some time ago. We had bought it from there. So I don't remember the devotee's name, but there are many who have translated, not just in ISKCON, but even outside ISKCON, who have translated from Bengali to English.
Thank you, Mataji.
Yes, Mataji.
Thank you for the class, Mataji. I have a few questions. Like you mentioned, this Ashtasarika Bhava, which is written in your devotee. So where do you read about that, Mataji?
So the Ashtasatikva Bhava called as the eightfold, you know, devotional ecstasies which come in the body of a devotee, which is, you know, hair standing on end and trembling in ecstasy, rolling on the ground. So there are like eight. Generally, as devotees, we do not dwell too much on that because obviously those are the manifestations of, you know, very highest stage of bhava and prema. When a devotee is at that stage, they manifest this, like Srimati Radharani and her associates, they would manifest. So generally we don't dwell too much on that. But I think there are many references even in the Srimad Bhagavatam or even in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because in Chaitanya Charitamrita there are so many pure devotees who would get that. So we can just touch base and try to understand for our philosophical understanding, but we don't dwell too much on these Ashta Sattvika Bhav.
Mataji, you were mentioning about the devotee who had two qualities of two souls into one body. So what's the purpose of that? There might be more than two or three qualities of soul in one body, in this material world. So what's the purpose of that when that happens here?
So it sometimes, you know, two personalities come together in one particular body. Like we see even in the, I think Ramanand Rai, he is also Arjun and one of the gopis, no?
Lalita.
I think Lalita Sakhi. So, you know, we see sometimes these personalities, you know, two personalities, because It's two way, like, you know, for example, this Kusumapida Sakha, who is, you know, Krishna's cowherd friend, and Vyasadeva. So, two elements come together for manifesting different aspects of the Leela of that particular personality. Now, Vyasadeva came because obviously Vrindavandas Thakur was going to be empowered later on in his life to write the Chaitanya Bhagavat. So, therefore, he came because he is the original compiler of Srimad Bhagavatam. And sometimes these friends, you know, friends of Krishna or gopis or manjaris, they also come because they want to, you know, assist Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his pastimes. So assist Krishna in his pastimes, as, you know, he came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they also would like to participate in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Just as when Srimati Radharani came to know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Krishna is going to take birth as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. She knew Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to be a sannyasi. So there is no going to be any, you know, like in Krishna Leela and Ram Leela, she could come as Sita and all. So therefore she came as Gadadhar Pandit, just to be, you know, part of the pastime. So sometimes these devotees want to be part of these pastimes of their Lord. They can't bear that separation, and they also want to serve the Lord in their different incarnations. So that is why we see different personalities come to manifest these different qualities through that one personality. Anything else? Yes, please.
Thank you for this course. Vrindavan Das Thakur, is it his appearance day or
disappearance day?
Disappearance, okay. I never count that. Thank you.
Okay, we'll end the class here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur ki. Gaur Premanande.